I would do the first two, providing the background of the necessary material mathematics. And the third and fourth lecture will be given by Cang Feng. He will talk about, of course, something much more mathematical and much newer. I will also try to mention some of the lectures later on in this workshop, which are related to the background that I provide here. All right, having said that, I want to say that I think I should apologize first before disasters happen, that I just came back from Tibet. I'm still under the influence of jet lag, as well as the high altitude sickness. Anyway, so the point of the first two lectures is just to provide necessary background and sort of directions of diffusion and cross diffusions from the point of view of pattern formation. So so again, I will start with diffusion. I will only use examples to talk about these things. All right. So this can go. Now, I will be mainly talking about systems. Maybe that's better. All right. I will be mainly talking about systems nothing works well after the trip to Tibet, I guess. Everything's sick. All right. So I will start with kinetic system that's an ODE, and then with diffusion added, and the interesting phenomenon happens. Sometimes that's not adequate for our purposes, then cross diffusions are, we will get into the model. So with diffusion added to a kinetic system, there are a number of interesting phenomena already. One is the diffusion-driven instability that was essentially due to Turing about 50 years ago. I will concentrate on that one a little bit in the first talk today. There are other interesting phenomena like diffusion-induced extinction, diffusion-induced blow-up that I will not touch upon. Now, with cross-diffusion, there are two directions. One, there are two categories. One is the so-called positive taxis, and the other one is the negative taxis. Positive taxis basically says that if you have two reactants, the characteristic phenomena for the positive taxis is that when you have two reactants, they peak together. You have one U and a V. They peak together. With the negative taxis, so what I'm trying to say is that whenever you see when one has a phenomenon like that, people try to use positive taxis to model that. For the segregation phenomena like this, U and V is a segregation phenomena. Negative taxis is often used. Again, I will use examples to describe this. Just for the moment, I will say the positive taxis, for instance, you have seen that quite a bit already in the literature due to, for instance, Ketter-Siegel model in the chemo taxis. For the negative taxis, that I will also concentrate on in the second talk, using this Lotka-Volterra competition system. So, since what we're going to do in this workshop is talk about the concentration phenomena, so I would say we're going to concentrate more on the Spiegler steady states for the diffusion system and the cross diffusion system. And I will also try to mention periodic solutions because I believe some of the talks will be on the periodic solutions. as well. I'll be more specific later. All right. So let me quickly run through the preliminaries first. These things, I think it's everybody here probably knows better than I do anyway. So let's start with diffusion. So we have a diffusion. We have a single equation, the Heede equation. And of course, the boundary condition is the Neumann boundary condition, where we assume there's an isolated system, no flux coming in, no heat goes out. Then, of course, as time goes on, you let time go, the solution will tend to, of course, a constant. The constant is the average of the constant is the average of the inertial value. And that's all. So diffusion in a single equation setting doesn't really create patterns. That eliminates patterns. The single equation case, of course, one can talk about a reaction diffusion equation where you have a source or a sink, F, up there. Then similarly, at least in the convex domain case, no stable, non-constant, steady state, the SS means steady state, is possible. And for the non-convex case, there are examples for stable, non-constant, steady states. By the way, for most part of the talks, 1 and 2, it'll be expository. I will not get into the technical details, but I assume in the third and fourth lectures, Changfeng will get into some of the details, so you will be able to see that. Plus, today would be a good day anyway, because after the heavy stuff in the first lecture, it's a change of pace. So. All right. So that's that. Well, I just want to show the picture here. It's a dumbbell-shaped domain in Matano's example, where he constructed a stable, non-constant, steady state, where the nonlinearity F looks like that. It's a bistable case. All right. So now let me now go to the... So basically what I'm saying is, I guess, is for the single equation case, pattern formation, it's hard to use single equation to model patterns. All right. So now I want to talk about the diffusion driven instability using an example due to Gero and Meinhardt. This is actually an example grew out of Turing's idea. So we have an activator inhibitor system here. U represents the concentration of an activator. V represents the concentration of an inhibitor. And all the constants, D1, D2, P, Q, R, S involved are positive. And, I guess S is not negative. The rest is a positive. This is a model due to Gerhard and Meinhardt in 1972. And mathematically, what this does is an interesting thing. As I said, I wanted to compare this partial differential equations to its kinetic system. That is to say, U now is independent of X. U only depends on T, and we have an ODE of this kind. It's the same reaction term. Then one can see that the constant U equals 1, V equals 1 is a steady state, of course, for both systems because of the Neumann boundary condition. Then you can show that it's just exercise to check that this is asymptotically globally stable, or globally asymptotically stable for the ODE. However, with the Laplacian added introduced into the system, things change. So, heuristically, what happens? Well, heuristically, if you replace Laplacian by one of its eigenvalues, say in the eigenfunction direction, lambda phi k, of course, Laplacian gets replaced by lambda k. Then originally, if you compute the eigenvalues of this matrix, maybe they are stable, both are negative. But now when you compute the eigenvalues of this new matrix, then with the lambda k introduced, things change. And that's very clear. Things could change. And things does, of course, and things do. So this phenomena originally was stable. This is the linearized system at 1-1 for this one, and you can change it to this one. So, and this is the linearized system of 1-1 in the direction, of course, lambda k heuristically. So that shows that the stability could change. All right. This phenomena, this system, activator inhibitor system, was introduced to model the regeneration phenomena of Hydra. Hydra is a very primitive animal. But the regeneration phenomena is probably one of the oldest phenomena ever discovered in morphogenesis, anyway, by Trombley in 1744. So a typical experiment that people do nowadays is that. All right, so I'll show a picture of Hydra first, maybe. All right, anyway, Hydra. I will use this to represent the head of the Hydra, and this is the tail of the Hydra. These are the tentacles of the Hydra. And so a typical experiment people do is that people pick a suction that is close enough to the head of a Hydra and take out a tissue out of that and transplant that to another Hydra at different locations at different time. And things happen differently. If you don't wait, if you take it out, if you cut the suction and then take out a tissue, transplant that to the tail portion of another Hydra, nothing happens. If you wait 6 hours and then transplant that to the tail portion of another Hydra, a new head is formed. Well, if you wait 6 hours and transplant that to a portion that is close to the old, to the head of that new Hydra, nothing. Again, nothing happens. Now, if you wait longer, 48 hours, a new head and a tail will form. So this sort of lead them to conclude that this phenomena is not due to cell orientation, but to a graded property of some chemicals. This is a conjecture. And the two chemicals, one is the activator, the other one is the inhibitor. So Turing has the theory says U is represents the activator. The activator should diffuse slowly, and the inhibitor should diffuse rapidly. And the profile for the activator is the red one, U. The profile for the inhibitor is the blue one. So this is his theory. But we have just seen that diffusion in the single equation setting does not seem to produce patterns. So in this case, Turing argued in a heuristic argument that if one diffuses slowly, that is, if D1 is very small and D2 is very large, as I wrote over here, that one, then pattern formation could happen. So,
these chemicals have never been discovered. Right?
Yes, I will get to that. This is a theory, still a theory. Some biologists think, theoretical biologists think, this is one of the most important ideas in the century in theoretical biology, but unfortunately was never verified. But it has been verified, the idea has been verified in chemical experiments. It's called CIMA reaction. And I'll come to that. I touch upon that a little bit. Many problems are open mathematically in this direction. All right, so that's that. Now, so one way mathematicians do, of course, is to play with those parameters. So this is what we do. In that system, we let D2 go to infinity, since D2 has to be large. So we let D2 go to infinity. See what happens. Well, if you let D2 go to infinity, suppose you have a priori estimates, a priori bounds for U and V, well, which is not so clear at this point. But suppose you do. So formally, at least, you divide the second equation by D2, and D2 go to infinity, suppose everything's bounded, that implies Laplacian V goes to zero, as D2 goes to infinity. That with the help of the boundary condition, V goes to a constant, spatially homogeneous. So the second equation becomes this one. When you integrate it, becomes this one. So that system becomes a PDE plus sort of a non-local ODE, and this is the so-called the shadow system of this of the original system, and if we study the steady state of the system, that is to say, suppose all the quantities are independent of t, that means we throw this away, we throw this away, we get a elliptic PDE plus an integral constraint. It turns out that this integral constraint isn't really a constraint in the elliptic case. You can always make it happen. So suitably scaled, this system, the elliptic system, is mathematically equivalent to the single equation down here. I should show it here because you're going to listen to this one for about 2 hours next week about this single equation. This is a simple-looking equation. Nothing can be really simpler than that. However, it does allow a lot of flexibility, a lot of possibilities. This equation has, for epsilon small, has many, many solutions. And I just want to show you one picture of one possibilities of these things. For instance, this is certainly in the those spikes. This equation allows spikes to form if epsilon is small enough, both on the boundary and in the interior, and this is what Changfeng is going to talk about next week. But what's more is that it doesn't. This is proved. Okay, so he will show you how the proof goes. But what's more, I think, is that this equation also allows other profiles than, you know, profiles other than that. For instance, here it allows spikes, as I've shown, but it doesn't have to be spikes. It could be a ridge, sort of to say. That is to say, a spike means a local maximum is concentrated on at a point, a zero-dimensional subject. But it could be that something like that. You have a ridge. That could happen, but that has not been proved. That is to say, the local maximum could form a higher dimensional gadgets, but that's not it's I think the structure of this equation is extremely rich. So anyway, so here is the background for that. But let's do not get carried away. I think even Turing said in his paper that, quote, this model will be a simplification and an idealization and consequently a falsification. So he knows very well what he was trying to do anyway. All right. So as Joseph So pointed out earlier that this idea, this Turing's idea remained as a theory, was never really verified. To the best of my knowledge, that was never really verified. It was until 1989 or 1990, actually, chemists, I was told, stumbled onto this one. They discovered this by accident. So I want to talk a little bit about that and maybe give you another system. All right. So how to produce Turing's pattern experimentally? The difficulties are that to have activator diffuse significantly slower than the inhibitor does, and also not to allow convection. How can you not to allow convection? So people found that actually if you do your experiment in a gel reactor, then it's okay. There's no convection. So it's called, the first experiment done in this direction is called SEMA reaction. It's chloride, iodide, malonic acid, and starch in a gel reactor. This was discovered in 1990. And the activator is iodide, the inhibitor is chloride ions. It's not quite that. It's I would say that they serve as activator and inhibitor. Doesn't mean they are. But there are five ingredients in this experiment. Therefore, it's a 5x5 system. Now, the five... Nothing is perfect, I guess. So the 5x5 system is very difficult to do. Of course, later people having this done first, already people use other kinds of things to produce all kinds of patterns. For instance, many other people did. I only mentioned a few here. Pattern observed including hexagon, black eye, rhombus, honeycomb, strips, all kinds of things. But the original one was what was line of spots. That was in the original one. So, in a couple of years later, after this was done, there is some reduction. Again, reduces the SEMA system from a 5x5 system to a 2x2 system. Because they observe that, the authors there observe that three of them essentially remain constants during their reaction. So they can reduce that into a 2x2 system. Again, this is a system. Well, it doesn't look that complicated if you compare that one to this activator inhibitor system, right? They look different because a priori estimates for the activator inhibitor system are difficult to get mathematically, while the a priori system for this case are easy to get. However, it appears, there's no proof yet, it appears that this system allows even more patterns to form. Just many more. There's some preliminary work. Most of the work done so far are not by, let's say, pure mathematicians. People use bifurcation analysis in applied science to analyze this system. There's some preliminary work done by Zhang and Mokshun Tang and myself. I believe Tang has been talking about it last year when he was interviewing around. So some of you must have heard of that. Anyway, mathematical progress on this system is very limited at this point. And yet, I would say the system carries a different feature. A priori estimates are easy to get, almost obvious, but it does allow many more. It does seem to allow many more patterns. Stable, non-constant, steady states for this simple system. Anyway, so there are many young.
What kind of pattern? Is it higher dimensional or just still off?
Basically, let me put it this way. If you look at the eigenfunctions, the normal domains of eigenfunctions, they produce basically every one of that. There are parameters. You see, all these things have parameters. You need to adjust d1, d2, alpha k, and so on. But what's good about this system is that experimentally, they give you the value of D1, they give you the value of D2, they give you alpha, they give you K. And then they tell you what they can do experimentally. Well, mathematically, we don't know how to do that. Well, we know how to do that using bifurcation analysis, but that's local. These are small amplitude solutions. We need large amplitude solutions. So this is the system. May require, I think, new ideas. All right. So that's that for the diffusion. Before I take it away, I do want to make a remark about this. The point here, let me just try to sum it up. The point here is that the 2x2 system is very different from single equations. Using diffusions, one can model all kinds of phenomena. But nonetheless, it is very important to have nonlinearities of this kind or nonlinearity of that kind. That is activator inhibitor type to produce patterns. With different kinds of nonlinearity, things may look very differently. So that's what I want to pursue next, to model this kind of phenomena. Again, I will take a classical one here. I will take the Latka-Volterra competition system. So that's well known, of course. All right. Let me start with ODE again. Anybody who had an undergraduate ODE know how to do those, are familiar with this kind of equations. Logistic equation U now is, again, a function independent of X. Represents the total population. And A1 over B1 represents the carrying capacity of the system. Now, when you have two species competing, then you just take the same idea and form the Latka-Volterra competition system like that. And it turns out that you can, at least at this point, there are three parameters are important, only three of them anyway. There are six parameters, AIBICI, there are six parameters, but only three of them are important. So you can take any three. Normally, we will take the the ratio between those corresponding AIBI CIs. All right, I do want to talk a little bit about the nonlinearity so that just to make a little bit connection mathematically to other types of mathematics. So a little more general system. There's no reason to just use this kind of nonlinearity, say linear in the parentheses. For instance, one can use a nonlinear one. And then, of course, this gets into, once you add a diffusion, this gets similar to, say, the Ginzburg-Landau equation that allows extra structure. And I will come to that in a minute. So again, the goal is to try to model spatial and temporal patterns about individual migration and so on and so forth. So let me start with the Latka-Volterra competition system. With diffusion, it looks like this one. All right. This is a typical one people know. I denote it by LV, Latka-Volterra 1, sub 1, just to represent that just one of the many models anyway. So inertial values U0, V0, again the boundary is insulated. The system is an isolated system. And let's forget about the first case. Let's forget about the second case, they're not so interesting. The third case is not that interesting either, but I want to pick it up here. The third case is the so-called weak competition case. Capital B is bigger than capital A, is bigger than capital C. Let me take it down a little bit, just to explain. You see, we want capital B to be large. That means if B2 is small, then B is large. But B2 is what? B2 represents the competition ability of U versus V. And we want C to be small. So that means if C1 is small, our purpose is achieved. If C1, what's C1? C1 represents the competition ability of V versus U. So when we say B is bigger than C, it means weak competition. In this case, one can show that no matter what the inertial values are, U0, V0, the solution UV always go to U star and V star as T goes to infinity. So what's U star and V star? U star, V star is the constant, is the trivial steady state, which is the intersection of these two lines. A1 minus B1, U minus C1, V equals 0. A2 minus B2, U minus C2, V equals 0. Under this condition, they intersect at one point, U star, V star. And the solution, no matter where you get started, goes to that. So in particular, there's no non-constant steady state. No other constant steady state. No other steady state, anyway. So, and this result is independent of D1, D2. So no matter how you change your D1, no matter how you change your D2, this is going to happen. But on the other hand, one ought to look at the original model that we had a Latka-Volterra ODE kinetic system. We simply added the random diffusion. That doesn't seem to be a very reasonable thing to do because we are assuming two species, individuals are moving randomly. So something else has to be done. Let me see. Before I move on to something else, let me just stay just a little bit longer on this one for the strong competition case. Again, the strong competition case carries much the flavor of the single equation. Well, this system carries much of the flavor for the single equation anyway. So when omega is convex in the strong competition case, there's no stable non-constant steady states. And when omega is a down-bear shaped domain, again, you can construct stable, non-constant, steady states. The construction is fairly involved, very complicated. So, anyway, but you can do that. And there are other steady states, presumably non-stable, for instance. Was done, for instance, in the paper of Changfeng and Yuan Lo in 1993 in Communications in Pure and Applied Mathematics. You can look it up there. And actually, in the strong competition case, the diffusion makes a difference now. If one of the diffusion coefficient is large, then no non-constant steady states, and so on and so forth. But anyway, let's do not worry about this case. Let's go back to the weak case and see what can be done. But before I add the cross diffusion onto these systems, as I said earlier, I want to talk a little bit about the Lotka-Volterra type competition systems for the other nonlinearity. Well, in this case, you see, this system has a Lyapunov functional. And the Lyapunov functional can be written down like that. And if you differentiate it, of course, it's a Lyapunov functional, of course, it means something is decreasing. So in particular, this implies no periodic solutions for this system. Periodic solutions does not exist. So you ask, are there similar things for the classical Lotka-Volterra system? The answer is yes. In the weak competition case, of course, in the weak case only, and the Lyapunov functional takes a very different form. In the strong competition case, there is no Lyapunov function. So there is an open question. This is a question, I think it's many people wanted to know. It's a simple question. Are there periodic solutions for that the classical Lotka-Volterra competition system in the strong case? In the weak case, no, because there is a Lyapunov function. But in the strong case, are there any periodic solutions? Again, that took to the best of my knowledge, that is open, and many people wanted to know. Now, you can certainly... Let me take this one off. Again, they don't have to be square. U square, V square. For instance, this one, if you cross that out, change it to Q, cross it out, change it to P, any P and Q bigger than 1 will do. You still have a Lyapunov functional of similar form, you still don't have periodic solutions. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that again, the guess to the question here, the guess of the answer would be no. But again, I don't know how to prove it. I don't think it's known. So you can see that the nonlinearity makes a difference. The linear ones looks simpler, but turns out to be a little harder, at least in this for this purpose. All right. Okay. So now let me move on to the cross diffusion. At least I get the cross diffusion done. Introduced anyway. So the equation, I leave that one on there so that you can compare the two, a cross diffusion system in population dynamics. It was proposed by Shigesada, Kawasaki, and Teramoto in 1979. And you can see that the differences between these two systems are on the rho ij's. Right up there, rho 1, 1, rho 2, 2, rho 1, 2, rho 2, 1. the four extra parameters, and now of course the equation, the system is coupled in the highest order term as well. So again, the purpose of this model was to model segregation phenomena in population dynamics. Well, of course, in population dynamics, nothing is realistic, of course. Everything is educational, and that's just a fact of life. Anyway, there's some histories, but not much is known. I will talk about that when I get to that. All right. So, maybe I can just quickly go through the introduction of the rho ij's, and then leave the rest of the things to tomorrow about the system. So again, the differences between these two is the rho ij's, and you will see that they make a big difference tomorrow. So right now, let me talk a little bit about the model, just a little bit. So the basic equation, of course, is the conservation of mass. So we use U to represent the density, J represents the flux, and F is the source or sink. And we use a one-dimensional lattice for simplicity. The spatial difference is lambda. The time difference is tau. All right. Spatial difference is lambda. Time difference is tau. And we use P to represent the probability of an individual moving from x0 to x1 in the time span t to t plus tau. The basic assumption here is that lambda, of course, this P depends on tau and lambda. So the basic assumption here is that lambda squared over tau times p goes to a limit as lambda tau goes to zero. So you must wonder why. Well, I can tell you, if you haven't seen this one, that means you have not seen the derivation of the heat equation. This is the basic assumption where the diffusion comes up. There's no reason to assume this. You can assume something else. But then you will not get the heat equation. You will not get diffusion. You will get something else. For instance, you can get wave equation out of this one. You can get weighted diffusion. You can get all kinds of things if you don't assume this one. Again, there's no, as I said, again, there's no reason to assume this one. But at this point, we are assuming it because it gives a simple, it gives rise to a simple model. So with this assumption, if you compute the flux and everything, you will see, you will have the following three types. Well, roughly speaking, again, there is no reason to just assume to follow those three types. The first type is the random type. That is to say, the probability of this individual moving left and right or right is the same. Okay, so that's random. Then, if you compute the flux and everything, the equation you get is that one, the first one, the random. So it's a divergence form. And remember what d was? D was the limit of lambda squared over tau times p. Now the second one is the so-called repulsive. That is to say, the probability of an individual moving from x0 to x1 depends only on the condition at x0. Does not depend on x1. Meaning, if the condition at x0, the situation has deteriorated badly enough, then the individual will move, no matter. He doesn't care, or she doesn't care, where it is heading for. So it's called repulsive. Now, if it is repulsive, if you compute the flux and everything, the equation you get is this one. And the third one, of course, is the opposite. They attract. If the equation you get is this one. They all look a little different, but if you compute, if you carry out the computation, the second order term are all the same. The only difference is the first order term, which makes sense because the convection term decides the direction, of course. Now, this D is the one appeared in the equation here. So these are the DXT appeared there. And you can see that these three authors, they are assuming repulsive type of probability for this model. Because they are... Anyway, that's that. So what I will do tomorrow is to continue talk about the mathematics of this cross diffusion system. I would start with 2x2. I would talk a little bit about the what those rho ij's do to the system or in creating the patterns. Again, just like in the diffusion case, we'll get concentration phenomena in this system. And toward the end, I will also mention 3x3 systems. I will also mention periodic solutions of the of these systems. And anyway, so I think this is probably a good time, good place to quit today. Thank you for your attention.
Any questions, comments?
Yes.
Spikes?
Yeah. The spikes, that's a very good question. As I said, I didn't go into any details. The solutions you by, if it is a solution, it's always C2. If omega is smooth enough, it's always C2 omega bar. So at the peak, it is C2. It's only at the limit, it's a singular thing. Okay, so it looks like there's a singularity, but no, for every epsilon, it is a smooth function.
So at epsilon is 0, the number of spikes increase or convert to a fixed number?
As epsilon goes to 0, you see, you get many solutions. There is a solution which has a single spike. And as epsilon goes to 0, the single spike remains a single spike. And it goes to a point. The point is, as epsilon goes to 0, you get more and more solutions. For instance, as epsilon goes to 0, you can get the number of solutions goes to infinity. I think this, they'll prove much more than that. They will prove that given any number k and any number l, you can find a solution. Well, you can find epsilon 0, depending on K and L, such that for every epsilon smaller than epsilon 0, you get a solution with K interior spikes, L boundary spikes. Is that correct? Yeah. At least for some P, for subcritical P. I think Changfeng will show you how to prove that.
We should stay there longer. That's why.
It's a good reason to stay longer.
I know.
Other questions, comments?
Yes.
Do you have any examples of weak solutions in very symmetric situations?
Besides symmetric situations, I don't know any solutions, bridge solutions. Good question. I don't know. But I think there must be. I volunteer my conjecture. Okay.
Other questions?
Yes.
Last. About the hydro, the growth of the head.
Uh-huh.
So there must be some sort of critical number for the density of the activator U to grow above something, then it grows up. I do not see the link between the U and the V and the growth of the head.
You are talking about quantitative description.
Oh, right now it's...
Right now, everything. And actually, this—I should say that this has gone far beyond my expectation. When Takagi, who will be here soon, either today or tomorrow, or maybe early next week, when we started working on this one, we didn't know how far we were able to get to. But look at what these guys can do now. They have gone far beyond my expectation, proving those theorems. But yet, the bridge solutions are not established. So, as I said, all these spike solutions are zero-dimensional, sort of to say, quote-unquote, zero-dimensional solutions. Their singularities at the end are zero-dimensional. But you, between 0 and k minus 1, oh, sorry, and n minus 1, for every dimension, you should be able to get solutions with singularities, eventually with singularities of that dimension. That may require very different, or very new ideas, but at this point, no one knows how to do that. How to do that, right? Okay, good.
Other questions? Comments? Okay, let's thank you.
Well, thank you.